From our studios in downtown Portland, Oregon, this is a Coin6 digital exclusive.
For today's writer's block, I'm very excited. We have Jana Lopez on. I've known Jana for over a decade now. Well, I guess about a decade. I met her when Coin had a lifestyle show called Studio 6, and she was the publisher of a local magazine, and we had partnered with that magazine. And I've run into you a couple times over the years, Jana, since then. I know there was some event for Portlandia. I saw you.
Yes.
I think we did something in a bathroom, like a little Facebook Live or something like that. And then I saw you at the Foo Fighters concert a couple years ago. So thanks for coming on today. You have a new book out called Me, My Selfie, and I, EYE.
Yes.
And so this is exciting that you've written this book, but I started looking through it and I thought, wow, you've gone through a lot since I've seen you.
Yes, it has been a decade.
Yeah. And so let's talk about just where this all started, this journey of yours, because when I met you 10 years ago, you were publishing this magazine, life was good. You have two children that were fairly young at the time. And so what happened from there?
Well, what happened was I thought that the time had come to maybe sell the publication, just because I had taken it as far as I felt like I could take it, and I felt like it deserved more. Things were changing in the media world pretty rapidly. And so I felt like the time was right to start investigating that, and found somebody I thought would be a good fit, a custodian who would take it forward. And the sale didn't go as planned, and I basically got fired from the publication. Mm-hmm. And that set me into what I call a dark flight of the self. Some people look at it as the dark night of the soul, but I called it a dark flight of the self. And basically, that is when who you were and who you thought you were no longer is that person. And mm-hmm. then you're sort of left trying to reconcile, who am I going to be in the world if I'm not who I was?
Yeah, you and I were talking on the way up to the podcast booth that you asked me, you said, well, what would you do if you lost your job tomorrow? And I said, I have no idea, because I've been doing this since I got out of college, pretty much. I mean, just that the loss of identity, I think, is what you're describing.
Well, I think the question would be, who would you be
mm-hmm.
if not for
next.
This job?
Yeah.
Like, who would you be if not for what you did? I think most of us learn to define ourselves mm-hmm. by the roles we have in our lives as a parent or as a wife or a husband or an employee or whatever it is that we define us. And without those things, as those things start to shift in midlife, which they do, kids leave, mm-hmm. jobs change, divorces happen, disease diagnosis, something happens, then you're left to wander this really dark, lonely, isolated place to figure it out.
Yeah.
It's grief. That's what I'm saying. It's grief.
And it sounds like you really had just a hurricane, just this whole, a lot of things happening at once. And in your book, you talk about what you call the 7 Ds. And I know death and divorce and disease are among those. How many things were you experiencing all within the same time period?
Well, I would say leading up to the actual moment when I got fired, probably 5 or 6 of those 7. I think we go through simultaneous Ds. So you could get a disease diagnosis, or somebody you know dies, or you go through a divorce, something happens, and the combination of where you are in midlife and the occurrence or occurrences then sort of sets you off on this path of who am I going to be now? I think it's the incident and the timing that comes together for this like perfect storm of identity grief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all of this while you had young children at the time.
They were younger. And then as this all started to unfold, they were getting into their teens, and that was changing too. They no longer needed me the way they once needed me, and then without the title of mother or packing lunches or whatever it is, taking them to soccer.
Yes.
Yeah, whatever it is, without that.
Yeah.
And they have it on their own terms, mm-hmm. right? Kids will treat you the way they treat you on their own terms. Mm-hmm. They don't really think about you as a person.
Oh, I know. I've got a 10 and a 12-year-old. So
right.
Yeah, yeah. And so how did you get through that? I mean, what were you doing at the time to cope?
Well, I wish I would have known and I would have had some insight as to what I was going through, which is why I basically wrote the book. I wish I would have had some understanding that it was grief. Maybe I would have been kinder to myself, because I think I was so hard on myself. I had such high expectations. I had such judgment about who I thought I was supposed to be. And had I been maybe a little kinder to myself, it wouldn't have been as difficult. So getting through it was really slow, really slow and very incremental. And it was tiny, tiny pieces of things that were bringing me back. One was photographing hummingbirds, which was a silly thing on the outside, but I felt a connection and a joy and a simplicity without an expectation. It just brought me some happiness when I didn't have a lot around me. I'd also say that thinking in terms of what is it that I am going through? Is it something that I should be doing something about? I felt so responsible and guilty, and for my husband and for my children, and feeling like a failure, like I couldn't be there. So maybe a little bit of kindness might have helped, I think.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you were having kind of an out-of-body experience for a lot of it, like looking, like you refer to yourself as Jana in the book a couple times.
Yes.
Because you're looking at yourself going, who is this?
Totally.
Person?
I think that's the thing that's the hardest for people who have been successful or have achieved good things or big things or have such an embedded identity based on what they do, that without that, it's, I call it like the emperor with no clothes standing at Times Square at 8 a.m. Mm-hmm. stripped, naked and bare, and everybody just looking at you. And that may not be true, but on top of it, we're living in a world of constant social media where everything is out there and broadcast, and you're projecting this other version of yourself all the time, whether it's good food or fabulous trips. And meanwhile, on the inside, you're dying of some sort of a death. Your identity is dying. And so how do you manage projecting this identity of who you are, but you're not that person anymore?
Yeah.
So it does get very disassociated. You get very disassociated when you're trying to reconcile the person you're projecting, the person you thought you were, and this person that you're not yet becoming.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why me is the person you know yourself to be. The selfie is the person that you project in the world. Mm-hmm. And the I, EYE, is how you learn to see yourself again.
Right, for who you really are. Social media, you bring up a good point. I find, like, when I'm having, you know, just issues in my own life with my kids, it makes me depressed to look at Facebook sometimes to see how great everyone's doing. And I'll say that, and someone will say to me, well, no, Jenny, they're not all doing great. That's just what they put on there. Like, they're not going to put the bad stuff on there. And I think that probably, you know, was true for you too when you were going through this, that you just don't really want to see all that when you're going through something hard.
Oh, well, definitely. And I joke in the book about not having a hashtag that I've gotten fat, I'm having a drink every night, you know, nobody wants to talk to me. You know, there's no hashtag for that.
Right.
Feeling like a loser, hashtag.
Yeah, you did disappear from social media for a while, didn't you?
I did.
Because we've been friends on Facebook, and I think there was a time where I didn't see anything from you.
What was I going to say?
What were you going to say?
Yeah. I mean, I'm having crunch berries for dinner.
Right. Well, and you talked. Your financial situation after that whole, the magazine collapse was just,
there was
it
that
sounds
too.
Like it was awful. I mean, negative amounts in your checking and your savings when before you'd had this huge, how do you build from that? You know, especially when you're at a certain age, how do you rebound?
Well, I mean, I think I was lucky in that I had a tiny cushion, not nearly enough. I mean, it was super, super tiny. And I think about people that have to go to work and show up. Like, I couldn't even shower some days.
Right.
And I respect the women and men who have to show up and go to work and put on this face and trudge through this really difficult time. I describe it, it's not really existential crisis. It's not really depression, but it has elements of both.
Mm-hmm.
It is unnameable, and it's because it's grief. You can't put a name to how your heart is sort of trying to mend itself. And if you had a friend who died that you loved, you wouldn't sit there and say, hey, get your crap together. You know, what's wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why are you sitting here depressed? Like, you wouldn't beat the whip and crack the whip on yourself to get over it. And it's the same thing with ourself. So how I got through it was, you know, the financial piece was just barely I mean, credit card debt, absorbing all of whatever cushion I had. I had a supportive husband at the time who helps, and, you know, he's still supportive.
Your first husband or?
No, second husband.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
yeah.
He helped. I think it was just like a patchwork. Even looking at the studio right now, there are blocks of things. I feel like on the wall, there's this pattern of checkerboard foam. I think that's what I did. It was just an ad hoc, whatever the day I can do today to get through. And it was just slow and incremental. And I had a couple of projects too that were enough to sustain me, but there was no rhyme or reason. And there was certainly no motivation, which is why it was so hard. I couldn't fake it till I make it. Like where maybe in my past I could have, I didn't have the toolbox anymore. Yeah. I was non-functioning.
Well, if you don't have motivation, you don't have much of anything.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of that stems from depression or, you know, just feeling down about it. And so when did you decide that you were going to set out and write this book?
Well, why I wrote it and why I put it out are two different things. Mm-hmm. Why I wrote it was because I think I was so lonely and alone and isolated. I can think about it now. It just makes me, you know, I get overwhelmed. Was just a way to have a conversation with myself because I wasn't connecting with anybody. I wasn't even connecting with myself. And I felt like in midlife, this is the one time where you're wise enough to know some things and you still have enough time to do something different with your life. And I felt like this was the time to have a real, honest, deep conversation with myself, which is why I call it a midlife conversation about lost identity, grief, and seeing who you are. I wanted it to be a conversation with myself, with a capital S, and a conversation. And I felt like that was just super important. I had to know. I couldn't not know. And why I put it out was because I felt so passionate about the message that what you're going through is grief, and nobody talks about it that way. And all of the books that I found, they were all such BS, and they were all so superficial and wanting to give you these superficial solutions to really complicated and deep human experiences. And it is not seven steps to happiness.
Do you remember any of the steps? I'm just curious.
Well, I mean, I think all the books out there talk about joy.
Those kinds of books,
right.
So, but find your joy.
Right. Yes. It is. Find your bliss. You know, it's like an Oprah spread.
Like, oh, easy enough.
Right.
Okay.
And I was so frustrated by the fact that everything was supposed to be just a blink of an eye, quick fix solution to something that was just so complicated. There was no room, and there still isn't. Like, I look at what's out there in the books that are out there and the articles and the stories that are out there. Everybody wants to say midlife is a crisis as if it's a cliche. The man with the secretary or the car, the woman with the younger gardener or whatever it is, you know, they put out these cliches, and maybe those things happen. But why do they happen? Because you're just trying to jumpstart a pulse.
Right.
You feel dead inside. And so it to me was just like, I got so tired of seeing the same stuff over and over in this conversation that I felt like people deserve better. They deserve more. They need to be seen. They need to be heard. They need to be understood. They need to feel loved. And maybe not in every moment of every day, but midlife is profound. It's hugely profound. And if it doesn't hit you now, it will at some point. You know, it's inevitable. I believe that it's inevitable. So I felt like people deserve something different.
Yeah. So not only cathartic for you, but also just trying to help people that are going through. How old were you when this all first started?
I would say I was 49. But I think the whisperings of who am I, not for what I do, started maybe when I was 44. But then I started getting on the wheel of having to be responsible in the business and the mothering and the children. And then you don't have time. And then you're left to float down a river and you watch yourself just sink away.
No, I mean, I'm 44 now. And it's definitely in the past year or so is when I felt the most I feel like other people see me as old. And I do start to wonder, like, where did that fun girl in her 20s go, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. And it's kind of a weird feeling to wonder, at what point do you become invisible? Mm-hmm. And I don't mean in the, again, not the cliche way of feeling invisible, but you start to disappear from yourself. Mm-hmm. And there's a separation that happens. And then really what you're doing is filling in with these blocks of what you do or what you fulfill or the roles you have so that that internal piece is not nourished or recognized or connected with, so that when those blocks topple, you're empty.
When the kids go away or when you lose your job or, you know, have to retire maybe because like in my profession, you age out.
Right.
Yeah. And so what I like about your book is that it's you've got these real just kind of whether they're funny or sad, but funny or sad, they're real short chapters with these catchy names or, you know, what to expect when you're expecting. And that's not about pregnancy.
Right.
It's kind of about expecting how this it creates this like false sense of, you know, wanting this hope or optimism when something doesn't work out. I mean, how did you go about breaking this up?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I was stuck with the expectation of what I thought, what I thought a book was supposed to be.
Yeah.
So much so that it kept me from writing it for a long time. And then once I realized that I was going to self-publish, which was intentional, I thought it could be anything I want it to be. Mm-hmm. So I took the things that I understood the experience of being in the stark flight of the self entailed, judgment. I have a chapter about judgment, expectations. The marriage is like how to be a we when there's nothing of me. I talk about social media, which I can't say here, but it's F the cloud.
Yeah.
So I talk about
this is a family podcast. Yes. Shannon.
So I talk about all the aspects I think that influence and hinder and support this identity journey in midlife. Mm-hmm. So I just sliced it up with all of the pieces I felt were relevant because, you know, I didn't want it to be a book about me.
Right.
I wanted it to be about my experience and have people see some universal, which was a fine line. And I've been told, which is really a compliment, that I'm not whiny, that it's funny. And I've gotten a few emails that people have told me that it's given them hope, that mm-hmm. they didn't really understand what they were in. And that alone has made it worthwhile because it is very personal. Mm-hmm. And I think people are sometimes surprised to learn some things, but I didn't want it to be about me, and it wasn't meant to be a memoir. It was meant to be a conversation that people can jump in and jump out of.
Yeah. Well, I can see how people would say that because there were parts I was reading where, you know, you're a deep thinker and you write very well. And I thought, oh, that's exactly how I feel. I would have never thought to say it like that. But yes, that's exactly like how I was feeling about such and such experience. You talk a lot about Mark, your second husband in this book and about the highs and the lows. How did he feel about that?
That's a good question. I finished the book over 4 years incrementally. And when my first final draft was done, I handed it to him and said, read this, because there was no way I was going to put it out if I didn't get his sign off, because he is very much part of the book. But I included him, I shouldn't say but, and I included him because I think the struggle of marriage is super, super real, especially when you're going through a midlife identity meltdown or confusion. I mean, how are you supposed to show up for somebody else when you can't even show up for yourself? And I felt like that was so important to bring that into it. And I think at first he was not pleased. I would not.
Just say it lightly.
I would say, but he was always very supportive. Mm-hmm. And I think he knew that I had to do this and that it was part of the bigger story. And I want people to recognize that whether they're married or not, or they have a partner or not, this is just one element that complicated it for me that I feel some people will probably relate to. Mm-hmm. It may not be that aspect of it, the identity meltdown, the marriage part, but it's all relationships. I had friends for 20 years that I'm no longer friends with at the outside of this. I think what it meant to show, relationships change.
Yeah, well, yeah, and you talk about, I mean, there's some stuff in there that I was wondering about with Mark. You even talk about how your bodies both change, like your weight would go up and down his weight would go. And you said something like, and you know, he wasn't necessarily in the fighting shape either. And so neither of you were, you know, I don't know if attracted to each other is the right word, but you guys weren't really, you were more roommates than anything
for
else.
A long time.
So many people go through that.
For a long time, yeah. we were just coexisting. And I think we're still trying to find our way back. Yeah. I think it's clear that we want to find our way back. And in some ways, he went through his own midlife identity thing right when I met him because his wife died of cancer. Mm. So he, for 4 years, the first 4 years, it was all about his crisis or, you know, dark flight of the self. And the next 4 years was all about mine. And so we're trying to navigate and figure out how to come together. It's still a process. It's mostly probably me. I mean, I think he's steady Eddie, mm-hmm. you know, throughout all this, but I don't know that that's necessarily true. I don't know how we can shut off from what's happening in our world right now, yeah. or what's happening in this midlife time. Parents start to die. You start to think about planning a will. I mean, these things are strange. Yes. Your bodies do change. You get aches and pains. One day it's your leg. The next day it's your back. You don't want to sneeze. Everything's a danger zone, yeah. just waking up. So how do you find yourself in that, and how do you come together in that? It's yeah. really complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. And as far as how you're doing today, I asked you that when we were walking up here and you said, you know, it's a work in progress. It's going.
Yeah. I think I used the description of the two ducks in the book. There's a story because I had noticed that there were two ducks swimming up a little creek by where I live. And I don't know why that was so profound to me. And then I started thinking about, well, what happens if one duck wants to swim in a different direction? And what happens if one duck decides to fly away? Or what happens if, you know, can two people have two different hopes for who they want to be in life and still find a way to swim together? And what if your hopes are different? What do you do? And of course, for women, we feel incredibly responsible for the physical aspect of a marriage, and that if we don't have sex or we don't show up that way, that our husbands are going to cheat, or boyfriends, or even our girlfriends, you know, whatever it is. I feel like that is such an interesting thing because your body is changing when you're in midlife. Your desires change, your feelings about your own body change, your body actually changes. So there's a lot of stuff happening at once.
Oh, I know. Yes. As I mentioned, I'm 44 now. So yeah, in the thick of that. So what is next for you now that you've accomplished this? Because I'm sure on one hand, you were so relieved and proud of yourself to have this done. But then what comes next after this?
Well, part of it is just enjoying this, mm-hmm. I think, because it does feel like an accomplishment. It does feel like something that I had so much judgment and expectation about doing, but I managed to get around that and do it anyway. Yeah. And I'm a midlife coach, so I'm trying to help people who are in the middle of this funky junk, as I call it, mm-hmm. Public speaking, talking to book clubs. I just want to share and be in conversation with people who are in this and give them a different conversation about midlife. I'm in school at Pacific Northwest College of Art, getting my MFA, my creative writing master's, halfway through that. Awesome. So I would like to teach someday.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, it's just still unrolling. I mean, it's just such a weird, interesting time. And every day I think I try to navigate where I am with myself. I still have some ways to go. I'm getting to know myself, but for some reason that is scary. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that's so scary for people, but I'm still just starting to get to know myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's good to hear that life doesn't end if you have all of these terrible things happen to you at once, you know, and that you can go on. I mean, you just kind of shifted what you were doing before, and now you're using your talents in a different way. So
I hope.
It's good. It's inspirational.
Yeah, no, right? I definitely hope. That is one thing I want to connect with people about, mm-hmm. is be with yourself where you are and don't be so hard on yourself and try to find the small moments, the whispers and the crumbs, as I call it, that navigate you. There is no quick fix Hollywood sunset solution that's supposed to happen here that's going to make it be different or make you different, and that you are where you are. You are who you are. You can't apologize for any of those things because you're in the middle of something.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, where can people find your book?
Oh, online, any of the Book Baby, Amazon, Powell's, any of the places. It's out on audiobook. I'm super excited about that for people that like to listen.
Did you voice it?
I did.
Oh, well, of course. I mean, it totally makes sense. I always think it's weird when you hear audiobooks that aren't voiced by the person.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
And again, I just did it. It is what it is.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, I just wanted it to be out there. And also, it's on Kindle, so all the major platforms.
Awesome. Well, Jana Lopez, thank you so much for coming on and talking about me, my selfie, and I. And it was so great to see you again.
You too.
The Coin 6 Podcast Network is your home for all sorts of content you can't find anywhere else. Visit coin.com/coinpodcast to see our entire library. And you can always subscribe to all of the Coin 6 Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.